Thanks. I appreciate that. Good afternoon. Happy Sunday, everybody. It's so dark. It is winter. I thought I would shed the coat for this afternoon. I don't know if I'm regretting it already. In the lead up to this term and thinking about Sunday talks, etc., Daniel and I were chatting about different speaking styles because we're really nerdy, I really easily identified that I am all about information being transferred through stories. Anyone with me? Yes, of course you are, because you're humans. Whether it's in church or at work, when I was at school, when I'm chatting with my family, I really feel like I get to know and understand things much better when put into the context of stories or real life experiences. I just love getting individual insights and perspectives and kind of experience their emotions through a good story. So to kick us off this afternoon, I would love you to just take a minute with the people around you, four or five, so I'll let you adults look after yourselves. Just take a minute to introduce yourself, say, hi, I'm Emily, insert your name, even if it's for the 100th time, because we all have to be a library of names. So hi, this is who I am, and B, hi and B, what is your favourite childhood story? So a storybook from when you were a child, whether it's from school or from your home life. What is your favourite childhood story that kind of takes you immediately back? Classic. Okay, 2 minutes, go. Okie dokie. All right. Wrap it up. I love the animation. You're all like, I'm a five-year-old again. Lovely. All right. Who is feeling wonderful and brave enough to shout out? What is your childhood story of choice? Anything that takes you right back? Famous Five. Give me a cheer if that's you as well. Famous Five. All right. Paddington. Classic. Paddington 3 is out. Any now? Now, it's good. Excellent. Say that again. Somebody over here shouted another one. Aragon. Apparently that's a classic. I'm really pleased for you. Anyway, pardon? Winnie the Pooh. Can't go wrong with a bit of A.A. Milne. Absolutely right. Two more. Red Wall. Red Wall. Was it about a red wall? Oh, okay. Brilliant. And Bill and Ben. Were they flower pot men? Excellent. Wonderful. Wonderful. For me, I feel like I'm outing myself as a 90s kid here, but for me, it was this one. Yeah, okay. I got The Rainbow Fish. Daniel was like, I have never heard of this book in my life. The Rainbow Fish. Oh, really, look, this cover alone just takes me right back to childhood. Earlier this week, because I'd seen that cover, I thought, I'm going to have to see, someone's definitely read it on YouTube, right? So I listened to it on YouTube, and they obviously have. And I was suddenly a small child again, wishing that I had sparkly scales to hand out to all my friends. This just took me right back to a time and a place. Like, we can kind of, and that's what stories do, isn't it? They take us back, we feel the emotions, we learn the lessons all over again. This next slide. Da, 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 da. Oh, it's not a video. Oh, no, it's not a video yet. Was there another book? No. So there's another book that's really a thing. Anyway, yeah, you are special. Does anyone else know this? Yes, hands up. So I didn't know this one. It's about a little wooden doll called Punchinello. This was a book that we were given by a friend of ours called Pippa. Many of you will know her. It was one from her childhood that held such significance in helping her understand God and the world that we live in, that she was like, every child needs this book, including yours. So I'm buying your kids. You are special. And so now she has passed on her special book and dropped it into our children's lives. And it has now, I can confirm, become actually a really special and significant book for our children too. And of course, it's not just storybooks that enable this, is it? As people, we tell stories of our lives, don't we? We tell about the funny moments, the significant events, happy, sad, anything in between. Telling stories of people and places that have meaning and memory. I was hanging out with my grandpa a few weeks ago. The legend is coming up to 90 in February. We're going to have a big party, very exciting. And we were catching up and we were swapping stories. And listening to my grandpa just got me thinking about what it is to be a storyteller, to have stories to tell, like which stories are important or stick with us. Like, I don't know every detail of my grandpa's life, past and present. And so I'm curious, like, which are the stories that he chooses to share? Which ones does he remember and recall? And I wonder which are the ones that over the years have just fallen by the wayside? Because every person, every group of people, community or family has their set of stories, like the ones that we tell over and over again, because they tell of our experiences, they depict something of the nature of who we are, how we work in the world, the values we might hold, like that story that Pippa handed down to us. And would you know that the people of God, the family of God, is no different? Next term, we are going to be looking at the story of Jesus, written by a guy called Matthew, who was one of his followers. From Christmas to Easter, we're going to be looking at that gospel. And we're going to be considering God's big story, kind of looking at who God is, what is the story, past, present, and future, that we can be stepping into and living from. And so today, I thought we could just whet our appetites a little bit and look at the art of storytelling. I have a little clip that can be played in a second from a video of a Canadian theatre company basically describing the importance of storytelling. They do it through their acting, but I thought they had some really interesting perspectives. So here we go.
Storytelling is just like it's probably the oldest art form, and it's beautiful in that it brings everyone together through their differences and their similarities. Everyone can recognize pieces of themselves when they come see a show, and that's wonderful.
I think it's one of the greatest gifts that we have as actors is the ability to share those stories and to find those stories. And we have the ability and the luxury here in Canada to be able to tell those stories to a broader audience, not just an audience of one, but to share those with hundreds, sometimes thousands of people. And that is so important going forward and continuing those histories, those personal histories that often get lost or fall through the cracks, to be able to give them to the next generation and the generation beyond that.
Storytelling has been, I think, part of human nature for
ever,
hundreds of thousands of years.
Ever.
And the theater is one place where you can still tell stories live. And you, as an audience member, you can still use your imagination, even though you've sort of got a picture up on stage.
And you know, the stories don't just tell us about us, which they do, but the act of storytelling reveals a lot about the storyteller. So we learn about who we are as we tell the story, and we learn about who we are as we hear the story too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been since the beginning of time, since cavemen sitting around a fire.
I really appreciated that insight. I was like, that is exactly what I'm looking for. Because as that lady just at the end said, storytelling is as old as humanity. Before reading and writing, we told stories to explain points, describe situations, share wisdom, tell people where the safe or the dangerous points were, to make people laugh. And so, of course, we see the telling of stories throughout the Bible. In fact, the Bible is one long, continuous story of God and humanity. But even within the story, we see people telling the stories of what we read about earlier in the story. You know, these individual moments of when God or when we within the big picture of God and humanity. And so, sorry, that was not nice. we're going to read a little bit from that story today, from a book in the Old Testament called Deuteronomy. So for a bit of context before we read it, the story so far, even. So we see God's people, the Israelites, they had cried out to God in their oppression under Pharaoh's harsh regime in Egypt. God had heard their cries and miraculously enabled their escape from this oppression. They had experienced provision by God in the desert in the form of bread, meat, and water. And they had received their commandments from God, those Ten Commandments, if any of us know those. God's people have been on this epic journey with God. And now they're in a place where they're still multiplying as a people group. And so there's this new generation of God's people moving towards the promised land. And this new generation had not got first-hand experience of God freeing their people from slavery. They had not got that first-hand experience of being provided for with their food from God. There's now this whole bunch of people who hadn't actually lived through those moments of God's very tangible faithfulness. And so we jump in at this point when Moses, their leader, is speaking to them. It's quite a long passage I'm going to read, so sit back and enjoy the story. Look, the highest heavens and the earth and everything in it all belong to the Lord your God. Yet the Lord chose your ancestors as the objects of his love, and he chose you, their descendants, above all other nations, as is evident today. Therefore, change your hearts and stop being stubborn. For the Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords. He is the great God, the mighty and awesome God, who shows no partiality and cannot be bribed. He ensures that orphans and widows receive justice. He shows love to the foreigners living among you and gives them food and clothing. So you too must show love to foreigners, for you yourselves were once foreigners in the land of Egypt. You must fear the Lord your God and worship him and cling to him. Your oaths must be in his name alone. He alone is your God, the one, the only one who is worthy of your praise, the one who has done these mighty miracles that you've seen with your own eyes. When your ancestors went down into Egypt, there were only 70 of them, but now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars in the sky. You must love the Lord your God and always obey his requirements, decrees, regulations, and commands. Keep in mind that I'm not talking now to your children who have never experienced the discipline of the Lord your God or seen his greatness and his strong hand and powerful arm. They didn't see the miraculous signs and wonders he performed in Egypt against Pharaoh and all his land. They didn't see what the Lord did to the armies of Egypt and to their horses and chariots, how he drowned them in the Red Sea as they were chasing you. He destroyed them and they've not yet recovered to this very day. Your children didn't see how the Lord cared for you in the wilderness until you arrived here. They didn't see what he did to Dathan and Abiram when the earth opened its mouth in the Israelite camp and swallowed them whole, along with their households and tents and every living thing that belonged to them. But you have seen the Lord perform all these mighty deeds with your own eyes. Therefore, be careful to obey every command I am giving you today. Commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these words of mine, the commandments. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders. Teach them to your children. Talk about them when you're at home, when you're on the road, when you're going to bed, and when you're getting up. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on the gates, so that as long as the sky remains above the earth, you and your children may flourish in the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors. Fab. That's quite a bit of a chunk, but it's quite handy reading a chunk of the Bible at a time rather than a verse here and there, because as I was reading this, I was struck by the order in which Moses is speaking here. So I was originally just going to be like, they didn't see the stuff. I was like, guys, we need to tell them the stuff. But looking at it in the bigger picture of what he said, this next slide, I'm not, you can't see it, but I've helpfully highlighted I've done some helpful highlighting for us on this one. So, this excerpt, we're going to keep this up so that, because I'm going to say colours, which are really obvious now that they're on a screen far away. This excerpt ends with Moses calling the next generation of Israelites to live a life of faithfulness to a covenantal God. That is the red bit at the bottom after the blue. Moses is calling them to live lives faithfully to God within the way that God sets out, those Ten Commandments. He says, commit yourselves to these commandments. Talk about them. Write them on the doorposts. Look, and he kind of looks to this future hope of God's ultimate provision. But before we get to that part of the, like, living God's people life, Moses has set it within the context of a couple of things. He set it in the context of A, who God is. That is the green bit. He says, God is great and mighty. He is an awesome God. He is about justice. He's about love. He's the God of God. He's just about him being the Lord of Lords. Moses is explaining who God is. And then he also sets this call to live the life within the context of who they are as a people. Who the people are is the orangey bit. So we've got green, a green line, orange, orange. It's all intermixed. The orangey bit. And he says this. He says, you were once foreigners in the land. You are descendants of those who left Egypt. You are the ones who saw God at work. You are God's people. He has multiplied you into this nation. He's setting who God is and who the people are. And then Moses amplifies this context by telling a few real life examples of God moving in the lives of the Israelites to that point. And that's telling the stories is that blue bit there. He tells of when God's strong and powerful arm rescued them. He talks of miraculous signs and wonders. He sets out specific stories of what God has done in the life of his people. The call to a faithful life is within the context of the story of who God is, who God's people are, and how he has been faithful to them. A few weeks ago, Daniel did a talk on what he and others are noticing, that there is a new generation of people, both young and old, who are interested in faith in a way that we haven't seen for a really long time. People want to know about spirituality. They're curious about faith, and they're coming and they're asking questions in a way that we haven't seen particularly for maybe 25, 30 years. And maybe you identify yourself in that place, why you're here today, and you're really welcome. I hope we can give a bit of context. And so we, the church, we need to fill in the background. We need to give the context. As it says in Deuteronomy, for they didn't see the Lord. They didn't see the miraculous. They didn't see what he did when. Some of us here are really long in tooth when it comes to a life of faith. We have seen and we have experienced many wonderful things from God. We know the stories. But some of us here are not even sure what we believe, or we're just starting out on this journey of faith, and we don't know because we haven't experienced it yet, or we haven't been told yet. People don't know who God is, if they don't know who we, God's people, are, if they don't hear stories of God's faithfulness to his people through generations, then we can't very well invite them to a life of faithfulness in return. We can't look forward with hope and expectation and live our lives faithfully to God and his kingdom if we don't know who he is or where we're coming from. And so it's essential that we, as God's church, tell those stories. I love that we do what's God been doing each week. It's not just a twee little thing that is like, doesn't that make some people feel fuzzy? It's actually a moment for us to share our faith of how God is moving in our lives as God's people. As that Canadian Theatre Company video was saying, storytelling helps us understand who we are. And we, the church, we're in the midst of a story that is millennia old and it's still unfurling. We have a story that grounds us in who God is, who we are, and enables us to step into something bigger than our own individual lives. Now, I just want to caveat that storytelling, I would argue, should err away from the sit back and get nostalgic for the good old days. I mentioned earlier that I was chatting with my grandpa earlier this week, a few weeks ago, and my grandpa used to work as a GP. I now work in a GP practice, and the amount of times I have heard, well, when I was a GP, telling me stories of what it was like back in the good old days when patients were actually looked after and doctors actually worked hard. That is, yeah, right? Thank you. Rather than going, yes, I remember those days too. This is not the storytelling that we're after. We're not after this harking back into the good old days of when it used to, if only. What we're after is the stuff that opens up a part of our story and helps us step into a greater storyline than our own. Like when my grandpa was regaling me stories of his upbringing during the Second World War. He was only a child during the war, but he told me that throughout the Second World War, when soldiers, who usually American, as they couldn't easily go home, when soldiers were on leave, my grandpa's family would open up their home and they would house officers on leave from the front. Officers would come to their home, they'd be fed and watered, they'd rest in lovely beds with a nice garden, and they would generally recoup whilst on leave. And it just struck me, as I heard this specific story that my grandpa shared that I'd not heard before, that opening up your home to others, particularly when in need, is part of my family story. It's part of my family history, and actually through the generations, like my parents have modeled the same as well. It was really cool to just identify a family trait and see a bit more of my personal history within the context of a larger family. That I, Emily, come from a family, the Becks, that are happy to open up their home to other people. That's it. It's not big and fancy. It's actually a little small thing, but it's not an insignificant part of my story. And I just felt empowered to like embrace it. I personally didn't house soldiers in the Second World War, but I'm part of the family that did. And it makes me want to look around and see how I can step into that, how I can replicate that or experience that in my generation, to have my own story to tell that adds to the story that has already been told. Does that make sense? And so, of course, it is the same with the family of God and with our life of faith. Like, what are the stories that tell us about who God is? What are the stories that tell us about who we are, where we come from, what's important to us, what our family values are, so to speak? What are the stories that all add up and tell of God's big story? I'm going to skip ahead because we've got some videos to watch. Dug-a-dee-dug. Because I think it's important for us to identify these things, because we are a storied people. We are shaped by what has come before, and we're part of something that is bigger than our own individual life. When Moses was talking to the Israelites, he recalls the story so far. He relays all the ways that God has been faithful to them to that point. And Moses says, therefore, go and live as if you're part of that story. Little secret, we are part of that story. Thousands of years later, we still get to tell the story of when God delivered his people from oppression and provided in the desert. The Bible is a massive story full of little stories about who God is and who we are. And so, like the Israelites, I also wonder, like, what are our personal stories as well of God's faithfulness, of his provision and his goodness? What are the stories that we might have to pass on to the next generation of people who are searching for a God? We who are individuals making up a larger family of God's people. And so, I thought we'd hear a few stories. Does that sound like a plan? A few stories from our time. A continuation of God's people telling of who God is, who we are, and what God has done. And so we're going to start by hearing from Jeremy Smith. Do you want to come on up? Jeremy is a... Yeah, go on then. Jeremy is a member of this church community of God's people. He's been walking with Jesus for a very long time, and he has he's been walking with Jesus, and he has a lot of stories of how God has been faithful and provided. I asked him to come and share a story, and he was like, "Would you want one like this, or like this, or like this, or like this?" Like, font of stories of how God has been faithful. And so Jeremy is just going to share a quick story from his life.
Yeah, the truth is that for both Helen and myself, God has been really faithful to us throughout our marriage, providing for us and supporting us. So this is just one story from when Helen and myself were in our 20s. We were newly married, and the group of churches we belonged to started a Bible school in Vancouver, Canada. And one day, one of the leaders came to us and said, "Been praying about you, and I really thought that you should be going to the Bible school in Canada. So will you think and pray about it?" And I think probably Helen and myself thought, "No way, you know, that's too much." We were just got a new mortgage around our necks, and we had no savings, and we didn't earn much money, but we prayed about it anyway, and we actually felt God say, "Yes, this is for you." So we went back to the leaders and we said, "Yes, we feel God is calling us to go to Bible school in Canada." So they said, "Right, okay, well, you'll have to pray that God provides the finance and the means to do this." And we thought, crumbs, because it was quite a few thousand pounds, which back then was a lot more than it is now. So we had to pay for our flights to Canada. We had to pay for our accommodation. We had to pay for the course, 3 terms. And as I say, we had no savings, nothing to put towards it ourselves. But we believed God was in it, so we kept praying. And when something was due to happen, so for instance, when the plane tickets were due to be paid, God miraculously provided the money 2 weeks before we needed it. And then 2 weeks before we needed the funds for the accommodation, God provided it. And it was like that all the way up to us flying out to Canada and starting at the Bible school. And he provided everything we needed. It was absolutely amazing. So when we went to Canada, we'd actually been able to pay for 2 of the 3 terms. We didn't have the money for the third. Obviously, in Canada, we had no means of earning any money. And so we were just, again, relying on God, praying that he would provide. And 2 weeks before we needed the third term's money, we had a letter from Helen's aunt with a check. Now, she didn't know. She knew we were at Bible school. She did not know we needed any money. She sent a check for the exact amount for the third term, 2 weeks before we needed it. So absolutely amazing. God provided absolutely everything. And as I say, all through our lives, God has provided for us. He is a faithful God.
Amen. So whilst Jeremy was the one telling that story, I just want to encourage us. He is our brother, my father-in-law, but brother. I don't know how that was. And so this is our story too. Like, because we're family, we get to take on that story and go, "Hey, do you know what? The God that I know and love, he provides for people like exact amounts of money like 2 weeks before. That's a story that we can own as part of our family story. I've also got a couple of videos. I expect the kids will come back in, but I really want to watch these two videos. So got a couple of videos now to put our little church community into a wider context. So this first one is from a friend of ours in a church in Chesterfield. And so I just wanted to basically put our little community into the wider context of the church in the UK. Let's hear Emma's story.
Hello, I'm Emma. Me and my husband Fritz are part of a leadership team at a church in Chesterfield. And I just want to tell you a bit about something that happened to our church last year. Around about this time, a year ago, we were getting ready for our church conference. We had speakers coming, we had events planned to run over the course of a weekend. And about a month before the conference, you might have seen on the national news, there was a big flood in Chesterfield, and it destroyed a lot of houses right around where our church is. The flood came and flooded the church basement, which had a lot of our equipment for events and our kind of decorations and things we would use to set up for events and special occasions. And all the streets surrounding the church were, it was just awful. It was just floods wiped out homes, and people were immediately made homeless. And it was interesting because our pastors, our senior pastors, Paul and Sarah, they were felt so strongly, just get out, get people, get out in the streets, get cleaning houses, let people come in, let people have drinks, do what we can for people. And that was kind of the initial stage of just opening up the church, having people come in, getting drinks for the rescue workers and people. And it was just amazing to see how this grew and grew, and God's faithfulness to us as a church at this time. Because what started just as wanting to be around the people and supporting our local community soon spread into something much bigger. And as a church, we set up a GoFundMe page to raise funds to help the people who were now displaced from their homes, and to help with some of the repair work. We had volunteers coming in and tidying up the streets. The council were kind of getting in touch with the church saying, can you coordinate certain things? And it was an amazing time as a church to be the hands and feet of God. And through this time, it was amazing because literally our pastors are just, they just love people. They want to be around the people. And so as a church, that's what we were doing. But by doing this, we started getting publicity. People wanted to come and speak, like radio stations wanted to come and speak to us and things. And then the local news were involved, and just word spread. And then our pastors were actually on BBC Breakfast News talking about what was happening in Chesterfield. But our pastor was able to share a bit of the gospel live on telly, because he just didn't want to waste that opportunity. And it's just incredible, because now we have people who have started coming to church because of the floods, because of things that have happened. And it's just been a real reminder to us that just being part of the community you're in, God can do incredible things. And the people we're now seeing come to church, or at least engaging maybe online with church or wanting to know things, it's just been amazing because of simply doing what God asked our pastors to do. And then through that, God has just multiplied what he wants to do in Chesterfield, which has been really amazing. So be encouraged.
There we go. So that is a church in Chesterfield, which is near Sheffield. I've got one more. I just had a nod. Go on then. We've got one more. This is from our friends. So, kid, it's 2 minutes. It's not long. That's what, okay. So our friends, the next one is our friends in Southeast Asia. Oh, you're saying it's 2 minutes, I have to let them back in. Yeah, absolutely. No, kiddos, come on back in. But also, we're going to watch a video. So our friends in Southeast Asia, so again, I just wanted to put the context of our church, our God's people in the UK are part of a global church. Hey, how about that? And so we get to take their stories and own them as ours as well. And so we're going to let the kiddos in, maybe one at a time, slowly come and find your grown-up. And we're going to watch a video nice and loud from Southeast Asia. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. My name is Sarah. I currently live in Southeast Asia, and Emily asked me to share an example of how we've seen God's faithfulness. 8 years ago, we moved to Southeast Asia, into a country that's really hard to live in, just trusting that God would make a way for us to stay here. It's extremely difficult for foreigners, and God has been faithful that each year or two, when it's time to renew a visa, He has provided a way for us to stay in the country. That's a very prominent example in our lives of how He continues to be faithful and keeps us here so we can keep doing the work that we're doing. Another example of how we have seen God's faithfulness is often there is a lot of spiritual warfare that goes on with the work that we do. And at the beginning of this year in January, I was under some really extreme back pain where I could not move. But our first thought was to bring me to the hospital, and so we did. And the next day I got an MRI, and the doctor said that there was nothing wrong with me. Around this time, there was lots of other things going on. There was sickness within the team. The boat broke down. Our car broke down. It took us a little while to realize that it was the enemy. Once we sent out a call for help for other people all around the world to be praying for us, then God answered. The next day, my back pain was healed. Some of the other issues that we were having took a few days to resolve, but God is always faithful in answering us when we cry to Him for help.
All right. And so, kiddos, thank you for joining us so beautifully. We have been talking about how stories can really help us know God better, know who we are, and understand God's faithfulness.